belief at the chaotic scene. I walked around and perused some of the stacks, which had no system that I could identify. Official stamped and sealed documents from Cape Triumph were mixed with handwritten notes. There were land deeds, tax records, birth certificates, business licenses, budgets, and requisitions for basic town needs. Alphabetical and numerical ordering didn't exist. The closest thing I saw to organization was a stack marked for clerk to do. The top page in that stack was a job advertisement for a clerk. "Are you serious?" I finally asked. Mr. Myers leaned against the door.
"Yeah, it is kind of a mess, isn't it? On second thought, how about this? Stick around town a week or so, and I'll see if I can get the banker's boy to come work on it for you."
He paused to take in my appearance, which had improved since yesterday. It might have been silly given the circumstances, but conscious of seeing Jago again, I'd taken the time to clean myself up as best I could, even going so far as to plait my hair.
"Someone like you shouldn't have to fix our problems."
I might have agreed with him, but his word choice made me do a double take. "Someone like me?"
"Sure."
He waved a hand in my general direction.
"You've got a little travel, wear and tear, but you're obviously a young lady of some refinement who doesn't deal with disasters like this."
I looked around again, assessing the quiet, messy office. Then I mentally contrasted it with being tossed about in an ocean tempest, accosted by Balanquins, punished by followers of a fringe religion, descending into a giant chasm, running into a burning barn, and being shoved off a boat to drown. Mr. Myers gave me a puzzled look, and I realized I was smiling, not so much because this was funny, but because it was ridiculous. After all I'd endured, this next stage in my survival came down to organizing papers. "Mr. Myers," I said, trying not to laugh like a lunatic, "lately, all someone like me deals with is disasters, and this is not a disaster. Give me a meal and a bed that's not a pile of leaves, and I'll fix this up in no time." Without waiting for his response, I dove right into the first stack I saw. He stood around for a few minutes, watching me like I might be a crazy person, and then he quietly slipped out. When he shut down his store and returned that evening, I had about 3/4 of the office organized, but I still hadn't located Jago. Mr. Myers's face filled with awe, either because of my accomplishment or because I was still around.
"Why don't you call it a night?" he said. "My house is down the street. Ellen, my wife, will fix you up a bed and some supper. No leaves."
The offer beat building another fish trap. I accepted, and then came right back the next morning. It was noon when I finally located any mention of Jago, and I almost missed it. He was a footnote as Jacob Robinson, at the bottom of a deed for land owned by someone else. The note said that a deal was in place for Jago to take ownership upon paying a prearranged sale price, at which point the estate's name would change from Grassy Hill to Orchard End. In the meantime, Jago had rental rights, and details of the payment schedule's current status were on file in Rushwick's bank. I was so excited. I wanted to hurl the paper aside and run out the door, but there was no way I was messing up all my hard work. Before returning it neatly to its place, I reread all of the financial terms. It was a lot of land and had a steep price. I clenched the paper and bowed my head as a wave of anguish washed over me. Jago had nearly sacrificed all of this. Branson knew of Grassy Hill and hadn't realized a sale was pending. He gave me directions, and I set out with trepidation. When I reached the location, I could see instantly how it had gotten both names. The farm's house sat on a hill that was, in fact, grassy. The rest of the property swept out, smooth and flat, and most of it was covered in apple trees. Some were green and full, likely to sprout blossoms any day. Others were dead, twisted, and grey. The buildings on the property were just as mixed. The home on the hill was in disrepair, and part of its roof was sinking in. A storage shed and barns were in equally bad shape. On one end of the property, though, a large stable was flanked by two small shanties. All three stood straight and sturdy, gleaming with new, yellow timber. No apple trees were near them, and a couple of stumps suggested recent clearing. Beyond the stable, a fence of that same new wood enclosed a broad pasture. My old friends Pebble and Dove were within, along with four other horses. There was so much peace and beauty here, I was almost afraid to intrude on it. But Jago was somewhere in this dreamland, and I had to find him. Even if he wouldn't help me, I needed to see his face again, and hear his voice. If I could just have those things, I felt certain I'd be able to handle whatever madness came next in my journey. I crossed the property and walked up to the fence to get a better look. One of the horses was a silvery grey, remarkably similar to Dove and Pebble. A solid black mare grazed by a colt, almost identical in colour, except for a white star on its forehead. And on the farthest side of the pasture, the fourth horse lifted her head and looked at me. She had a tawny coat, almost brandy-coloured, speckled with ivory. Her hair, however, was the extraordinary part. She had a mane that was pale gold in colour, with a length and volume I'd expect more in a lion. I'd never seen a horse with a mane that long, or with that kind of thickness. Her tail had the same kind of drama, and more of that golden hair grew on her feet, ringing her hooves like little clouds. I leaned against the rail and smiled. "So you're Felicia, eh?" I muttered. "You are a pretty thing. I'll give you that." Movement in my periphery made me jump up. A tall, hulking figure approached me, his bearded face puzzled. I gasped when I realized who he was. "Oh no, I can't believe it!" When he just stared, I took my kerchief off, in case that was confusing anything. "It's me, Tamsin Wright, from Grashand. Don't you remember?" "Oh no?" No flicker of recognition showed in the big man's face. A voice off to my other side said, "That's not Arnaud. It's his brother, Alexei. I told you you can't tell them apart." Slowly, disbelievingly, I turned around and found Jago smiling at me. Chapter 35. He was there. He was there, and he was real, and he was wonderful. After all the ups and downs, mostly downs, I'd experienced, one good thing had finally come my way. I was afraid to take my eyes off him, lest one blink make him disappear. I had to rest my hands on the fence to stop myself from trembling. Jago wore that smile of his, that easy, open smile that somehow seemed to know all your secrets. It undid me. That and those eyes. Those wondrous, bewitching eyes. Feeling flustered as the silence stretched, and also conscious of Alexei's puzzled gaze, I attempted an air of control and said, "Well, are you just going to stand there and stare, Jago, or are you going to invite me in, like a civilized person?" His grin grew so wide, it was a wonder his cheeks didn't hurt. "Oh, Tamsin," he said, "I've missed you." He spoke to Alexei in halting Belgian, and the big man nodded and trotted off. Jago watched him a moment, and then waved me forward. "Okay, Tamsin, come see my palace." I expected him to lead me to the big house, but we instead went to one of the newly constructed shanties. The one we entered was even smaller than his cabin in Grashand. It was more like a tent that happened to have wooden walls. "Palace might have been overselling it," he told me, taking a kettle from the hearth. I laughed and sat on a braided rug, seeing as there were no chairs or table. "If you knew what I'd been sleeping in, you'd know this is pure luxury. Sleeping in your sleigh was pure luxury, actually, compared to a riverbank." He poured two cups of lukewarm tea and then joined me on the rug, taking off his hat. His sun-streaked hair was damp with sweat, his cheeks ruddier than the last time I'd seen him. He wore an old button-up shirt that might have been white once, its sleeves rolled up to the elbows. He couldn't stop smiling, and I realized I wasn't the only one doing a lot of staring. A riverbank? What are you... His eyes flicked down, and the smile faltered just a little as he took in my clothes. Good grief, Tamsin, what happened to you? Green is still your colour, but... I ran my hands over my skirt. I'd cleaned most of the dirt off, but the velvet was matted and dull. I untied the apron, revealing the rest. I figured you would have noticed right away and tried to sell me something new. Why would I be looking at a dress when I had your beautiful face in front of me? But I can probably rustle something up for you. Now, where have you been? You did get to Cape Triumph, didn't you? Yes, and then I went some other places. The middle of Denham Bay, for one. I launched into my story, stumbling briefly when I described how I was nearly engaged to Warren Doyle. That was a necessary part, though, and as I delved into everything else, the awkwardness faded. I grew more impassioned as I spoke, my emotions bubbling over. For the last few days, I'd lived through incredible circumstances, forcing myself to focus on survival. Now, removed from them, actually describing them, I felt the full onslaught of just how dire my situation had been. It slammed into me, and all the fear I'd had to repress to get through each day now came out. I didn't realize how much I was shaking, how frantic my words became, or that I even had tears in my eyes until Jago drew me to him, resting my head against his chest.
"Okay, okay. It's okay now," he said gently. "You're safe. We'll figure this out." I squeezed my eyes shut.
"I was afraid you'd turn me away. I was afraid you'd never want to see me again."
"All I've wanted for weeks is to see you again."
His fingers curled into my hair, winding the strands around his hand. "But after what I did to you, it was terrible."
He leaned his head down, resting his cheek against my forehead as he thought over his response. "I know why you did it. You shouldn't have done it, but I know why you did."
"Of course I should have. I wasn't going to let you give up everything you've worked for."
Even in my bleak state, I couldn't help a spark of indignation. "It was mine to give up," he insisted.
"And mine to refuse."
Realizing the argument was quickly going to spin around futilely, I sighed and let it go.
"I'm sorry, Jago. I don't regret saving you from yourself, but I am sorry it had to happen like it did. You must have been so angry when you realized the fort was a trick."
"Angry? No. Shocked, maybe." He paused. "Heartbroken."
I felt my own heart break at those words. "Oh, Jago, I'm so sorry for hurting you."
His tone turned rueful. "Well, it was a little comfort to think you'd at least be safe and well provided for with some other lucky love-struck man." Silence.
"I want to laugh at that," I said finally, "but I think I'd start crying pretty fast."
"Well, we can't have that."
He helped me stand.
"Come take a look at what you saved. We'll get you fed and cleaned up. Then we'll figure out what to do next."
"But I..."
"Food and bath first."
Outside, the sun beat down, daring me to claim it had ever been cold in Adoria. Jago formally introduced me to Alexei, as well as the horses. The silver mare was Breeze, Pebble and Dove's mother. The black mare was Winsome, and her colt was Desmond. Jago's face shone as he described their personalities and petted the ones who came to see us at the fence. Felicia stayed away, though.
"She's jealous of you," Jago teased.
"Well, I'm jealous of her hair. I've never seen such a thing on a horse. Is that why everyone gushes over her?"
"Partly, but she's agile, too. Lots of endurance."
His eyes lit up. "And when you let her run, she's faster than lightning."
We climbed the grassy slope up toward the house, pausing at the door to survey the vista around us. Green,
green everywhere, smooth and rolling like the sea on an easy day. A gnarled lilac bush by the house perfumed the air, and the horses grazed contentedly in the pasture. Near the barn, Alexei knelt near a leafless tree, digging at its base. Jago pointed. The old owners never thought about using this land for horses. It was all apple trees when they came over from Arsfrid, and they maintained them for almost 30 years. When the husband died, his wife went to live with their son, out east. They hired workers for a while, but soon stopped and just let things go. And that's when you came along? I asked. Not right away. I came along about 10 years later. The mistress's son had been wanting to sell, but she wouldn't allow it. When I saw it, I knew it was perfect, but I didn't have nearly enough money. He crossed his arms over his chest, gazing about fondly. I tracked them down, got a feel for her, and made a deal that won her over. I can be pretty persuasive, you know. Yeah, I think I heard that somewhere, I remarked, straight-faced. I agreed to keep some of the orchard and restore the house. In exchange, we worked out a long-time payment plan, during which I could keep the horses here and start some of the labour. Her son would have preferred to sell it all in one go, but by then, he was ready for any sale. And so, here you are. Jago answered with a lopsided smile and slipped his arm around me. Here I am. If you're supposed to keep the orchard, why is Alexei digging that tree out? I asked. Because it's dead. Half of them are. We're trying to clear those out, but it's a long, hard process. Makes fixing up this house seem easy, and that's quite a feat too. Take a look. He used an ancient key to unlock the front door, opening it with a creak. Entering the house reminded me of stories I'd heard of great tombs in faraway lands where emperors were buried with all their goods. The rooms were all furnished and decorated, just as if they were in use. The layers of dust suggested otherwise, as did the disrepair. It wasn't just the house's structure that had worn with time. Some of the furniture and rugs were also falling apart. "This is why you guys sleep in the sheds," I said, peering up at a warped section of ceiling. "Yep, I'd rather welcome you here, but I also don't want the attic collapsing on you." We continued through the kitchen to the house's still room. The scent of herbs lingered in the air from where they'd been hung from the vaulted rafters. "This will be incredible when it's restored," I said. "It's a rival to any of the fine houses I saw in Cape Triumph." "You visited a few of those, I imagine." Jago moved to one wall where an old bathtub was lying upside down. He flipped it over and knocked away some spiders. "Did you doubt me?" "Never," he said good-naturedly, hoisting the tub up. "Grab the door there, please." We trekked back across the property to his shanty. He set the tub down with a thump and wiped sweat from his forehead with a wrinkled handkerchief. "If you don't mind the heat, you can have a bath now. Otherwise, it should start cooling down in a few hours." It took me a moment to realize what he was getting at. "Oh, I don't need a hot one. Cold water's fine." "After swimming in Denham Bay, no. You get a hot one." I ran a hand over my hair, which was limp and oily from days without a proper washing. "Then I don't mind the heat," I figured. "Be right back." When he returned, he carried a basin of steaming water and had Alexei in tow. Alexei greeted me in Belgian and handed over a basket of bread, cheese, and dried apples. Jago dumped the water into the bathtub and covered it with a tarp. Then, after urging me to eat, he and Alexei departed once more. When they came back, each with a hot basin this time, I tried again to deter them. "What are you doing? That's enough," I exclaimed. "You don't need to be traipsing about with tubs of hot water on a day like this." "It's no bother," Jago said in his cheery way. "We've already got more heating up on a fire out there." Guiltily, I ate the food while they laboured. When the bath was finally ready, Jago left me with soap and a large trunk. I offloaded a lot of my goods when I got to Denham, but Lucky for you, I've still got some women's clothes. Take what you want. We've got a few things that need to be taken care of this afternoon, but I'll check on you later. I looked around at the steaming tub, clothes, and remnants of my meal. A lump formed in my throat. Jago. He opened the door and winked. I know. I didn't get around to the clothes before he returned, because I never left the tub. Once I'd given myself a thorough scrubbing, I went through and scrubbed again, even though it left some of my skin pink and raw. I just kept feeling like I had layers of grime to remove and had to hold back from a third washing. Instead, I contented myself by lounging back in the sudsy water, luxuriating in this brief respite. Jago didn't look entirely surprised to see me still there when he came back. Isn't it cold now? Lukewarm. He poured himself a cup of water and then knelt down in a corner, putting a polite distance between us. Then we should heat more water and refill it. No, I'll be out soon. I leaned my head back against the tub's edge and stared upward. And then it really is time to figure out what to do. I know I have to get back to Cape Triumph, but from there... Wait a few days, Jago advised. He might be able to put off dealing with your disappearance in the short term, but if enough time goes by, he's going to have to commit to some story. Your return will contradict that. Otherwise, he'll be able to improvise. I'm in no rush to get back there, I admitted. Not until Mary comes, of course. But I hate the thought of Mira and the others thinking something's happened to me. I can't put her through that again. Better others think something happened to you than something actually happening. He mulled that over and then focused back on me, meeting my eyes over the side of the tub. Something very nearly did. I think you really do have an angel looking after you to keep getting out of these scrapes. That, or I'm just too stubborn to die. I'm glad of it either way, but it's time to make sure these close calls end. You can't go back to Cape Triumph just so Warren can try to kill you again, and the way to prevent that is by figuring out why he wanted to kill you in the first place. Because the Lorandian man recognized me, and I recognized him. I knew that he wasn't really Ikori. You knew that before. Harper believed you. Yes, but when we realized an actual Asphridian had attacked that fishing settlement, Harper didn't believe all the reported skirmishes were staged. I'm sure that's why the other reports he heard, thanks to me, helped spur him to shuffle soldiers around. But you think that Asphridian wasn't so much a disgruntled settler breaking the treaties as someone ordered by Warren to stir up trouble? So much of that night on the bay felt surreal and fragmented, but there was something in the way Warren had referred to his agents conducting attacks, and the way the Lorandian had bristled at the comparison to his own acts that made me certain of the theory. Yes, I finally said. I don't think Warren single-handedly is arranging all these attacks along the borders, but he's part of whatever group is. The Ikori and colonists each think the others are attacking, and that's going to lead to real retaliation, if it hasn't already. Now, the central armies are off to intervene, which could make things worse. Why would Warren want a war with the Ikori? Someone usually profits in war. You said he was talking about ammunition. Maybe he wants to sell it. I could tell Jago didn't really believe that, though. Surely there are better ways to make money, especially for someone whose colony's biggest export is gold. I started to sit upright, then stopped, too uncertain of my situation with Jago to parade around naked. But maybe it's not for us to figure out. Warren obviously doesn't want others to know this information, so there must be someone it makes sense to. Agreed, and we'll make sure it gets shouted in the streets. We'll head out to Cape Triumph later this week. We? We, he replied, giving me a pointed look. I mean, we all know you're a master fisherwoman, but there are parts of the Governor's Highway that aren't near water. I've got to go with you, if only so you won't starve. Besides, I've got some things I wouldn't mind selling in the city. Oh, well, if that's it, then I don't mind, I teased. I was worried you thought I couldn't take care of myself. Don't suggest ridiculous things, Tamsin. Now, if you want to stay in there, you're going to have to let me get more water. Just something to dry off with. He handed me a worn but clean flannel blanket and then moved away, keeping his back to me. I stepped out, dripping, and dried myself off before wrapping the blanket around me as a makeshift dress. Jago glanced over when I knelt by the trunk. If nothing fits, feel free to wear just that. Jago Robinson, you're the one who needs to stop suggesting ridiculous things. Right, sorry. I'll try harder to be a gentleman. Oh, it's not that, I said, lifting out a simple dress of sky blue lawn. It's just that you'd never be able to get a lick of work done around here, and I could hardly live with myself. Getting to my feet, I held the dress up to me. I don't suppose you've got a sewing kit in your treasure trove? I do. Right over there, actually. I was trying to mend one of my shirts. I peered at the pile of cloth he indicated. Try implies you actually did something. He shrugged. I was getting to it. There's just a lot to do. In fact, I've got to get back to work. Can't let Alexei dig those trees out on his own. And there'll be no living with Felicia if she's not groomed soon. What am I supposed to do while we wait to go to Cape Triumph? Whatever you want. There are books in the house to read. I've got things to write with. Or just relax. You've earned it. He walked over to me, rested his hands on my shoulders, and kissed my forehead. I don't have heaps of jewels, but you can still practice being a lady of leisure. I placed my palms flat on his chest. Thank you, Jago, I said softly. I don't know why you're so nice to me. You know why. I'm crazy about you. That hasn't changed. After everything I've done to you, more like just crazy. Same difference. I inched forward and kissed him, my lips just barely grazing his at first, and then moving in with more certainty. His fingers slid slowly from my shoulders, down along my bare arms, and finally settled around my waist. I reached up and hooked one of my hands behind his neck to bring us closer, my lips parting further. A rush of heat radiated through me, and taking one of his hands, I moved it up to the edge of where the blanket folded around me. His fingers immediately started to loosen it, and then he abruptly sprang back. What? I asked, startled. A bit of panic and embarrassment started to flicker in me that I might have misread him. I'm not judging you on gentlemanly behaviour right now. Yeah, I gathered that. His gaze pointedly flicked to where my hands had caught the blanket as it started to slip. But you should be judging me on how sweaty I am. I'm the one who needs a bath now. Really? I didn't notice. I was too busy looking at your beautiful face. You didn't seem to be looking at it that much, but I get the sentiment. He gave me another quick kiss on the forehead and then retreated toward the door, his eyes running over me one last time. I'll see you at supper time. I followed him to the door and leaned in its frame to watch him walk away. Or was he sauntering? It was hard to say, but I liked the way he moved. I liked the way he felt, too, and my flesh still tingled from our brief encounter. After a few more moments, I sighed and shut the door. Wrapping my arms around myself, I looked around the tiny room and wondered two things. First, how exactly one went about being a lady of leisure, and second, how I ever thought I could be serious about anyone besides Jago. As it turned out, I could not, in fact, do the leisure thing so well. After hemming the blue dress, I continued on to mending Jago's shirt. Then I found a few of his other clothes that needed cleaning, so I filled one of the smaller basins with water and soap to wash his laundry and mine. I didn't know if the velvet could be salvaged, but I used every trick Ma had taught me. When that was drying, I poked around the shanty, looking for other things that needed cleaning or fixing. Jago was a neat housekeeper, all things considered, though he also didn't have much in his house that actually needed keeping. I found the writing implements and penned a letter to Mary. Just as I was taking down the laundry, the door swung open and Jago rushed in with a small covered kettle Behind him, the sky blazed orange. He set the kettle down and brushed a kiss across my lips. "Sorry I can't stay for supper. Desmond chipped a hoof." And like that, he was gone. I found what tasted like venison stew in the kettle and wondered if it was Alex's handiwork. I washed the dishes when I was done eating and then noted that the tub of my bath water had been forgotten. I couldn't lift it by myself, so I emptied it in batches, one basin at a time. By then, it was almost fully dark outside. A light shone from the barn window, and I heard the sound of clanging. When the tub was emptied, I started heating new batches of water. I couldn't do it as efficiently as the men had, but by the time Jago returned, the tub was filled again and had retained enough heat to still give off a little steam. He didn't notice it right away. He took off his hat and boots and started telling me about Desmond. When Jago did see the tub, he came to a halt. "Did you do that? You said you needed a bath." He studied it a bit longer and then took in the rest of my small chores. "Tamsin, you might be stunningly smart, but you don't understand what leisure means." "Quiet," I snapped. "It's going to cool off if you keep wasting time." And so we switched roles, with him immersing himself into suds and me waiting discreetly to the side. He told me more about the farm, and I listened, my heart happy to see him happy. It was a rare, comfortable moment of peace. "You haven't said anything in a while," he observed, when he'd finished describing some mishap with a stump. "You okay?"
"Just thinking, that's all."
"About what?"
"That I don't want to leave."
I gestured to the neatly folded laundry.
"I think I was happier working here today than I was at any of those fancy parties I've been at this month."
His bright expression sobered a little. "Ah, well, I don't really want you to leave either. But of course, you have to."
"Yeah," I said, wilting a bit.
His answer wasn't a surprise. We both knew the nature of the life I'd signed on for. And then he said, "But once you've reported on Warren and picked up Mary, you can come back."
I lifted my head.
"What?"
"Jago,
don't. I know what you're going to say, and no, I won't give up the horses and the land, and no, I don't know how we'll make it work yet." A spark of his earlier amusement returned. "Besides, you've been here for one day. Let's see what you'll say in a few more. You might be running back to Cape Triumph without me."
"Jago," I said quietly, "I don't want to go anywhere without you."
He was left at one of his rare losses of words. Finally, "Don't look at me like that. Not when I'm soaking wet and can't come hug you." I stood up with a blanket and strolled over, tilting my head to peer at the water. "That's not a very ladylike way to look at a man in a bathtub," he noted, reaching for the blanket. I kept it away.
"No, I was just noticing that the water's not really dirty. Is it still warm?"
"Mostly." I dropped the blanket and began to unbutton my dress.
"I bet it'd be warmer with two."
"I bet half the water will end up on the floor with two," he said wryly, though he didn't take his eyes off the buttons.
I paused. "Do you want me to stop?"
He sat up and shifted over. "Stop suggesting ridiculous things and get in here."
Chapter 36. I worked as hard in the next couple of days as I had among the heirs, as hard as I had in Osfro, and I loved every moment of it. I saw little of Jago during daylight. He always had something to do. The horses needed exercising and grooming. The orchard needed clearing. The buildings needed constructing. He and Alexei worked doggedly along in the hot weather, both ready with a quick smile when our paths crossed. Jago refused to give me any directives, but the more I explored, the more I found to do, too. Along with all the little domestic tasks I couldn't help but tend to, I discovered plenty of jobs inside the house. Part of preserving it and getting it ready for Jago's eventual residence involved cleaning it out. He and Alexei had done little of that so far, since their priority was in structural repairs to keep the place standing. So I ended up spending long hours sorting through the jumble of items, deciding what could be saved, sold, disposed of, or sent to the estate's elderly mistress. It was dusty work, but it really did feel like exploring an ancient treasure-filled tomb at times. I'd get absorbed reading or looking through collectibles, and then be surprised to find I'd hardly made a dent. I'd found a stash of old newspapers one day, and was trying to decide what to do with them, when I heard a knock and a man's voice. Jago had few guests, and those who knew him well knew he didn't live in the big house. Then the visitor called. "Miss Wright, are you here?" I carefully set down the flaking newspapers and made my way to the foyer. "Mr. Myers, is that you?" Rushwick's councilman beamed when I stepped outside. His face was flushed from the heat, and nearby, an old mare was tethered.
"You are still here. I'm so glad."
"Is everything okay?" I asked, wiping my dusty hands on the apron.
"Oh, yes, yes."
Looking beyond me, he held up a hand and waved.
"Hello there."
I turned to see Jago and Alexei swiftly approaching over the green slope. Both men wore wary, tense expressions, and Alexei held a large pine plank over his shoulder.
"Tamsin?" Jago queried.
"It's all right," I said. "I know him. This is Mr. Branson Myers, the one who helped me in Rushwick." After a moment's scrutiny, Jago relaxed and murmured something to Alexei. The big man nodded and eased his grip on the plank. Slipping into his salesman mode, Jago strode to my side and shook Mr. Myers' hand heartily.
"Well, how do you do, Mr. Myers? Jago Robinson. I sure am grateful for the help you gave our girl here."
"My pleasure, but really, she's the one who helped me."
He paused to push his spectacles up.
"Some of the other councilmen and I were surveying your work, and they were completely awestruck, as well they should have been. And so, I've come with a proposition for you. Would you be willing to continue to help us out until we hire a full-time clerk? We're getting around to it. Honest, along with the other positions. We could give you a stipend for your troubles, a silver a week, and perhaps, if the budget allows, we could keep you on as an assistant to the clerk if you are interested and still around."
The words came out in a rush, and he had to catch his breath before continuing.
"Are you staying around?"
I glanced over at Jago, who looked supremely delighted by this afternoon diversion. To Mr. Myers, I said, "That's so incredibly kind of you, sir. I can't say how flattered I am that you'd think of me. But we're actually going on a trip in 2 days, and even if... when I get back, I'm just not sure what my exact situation will be." Mr. Myers' face fell, but he nodded in acceptance.
"I see. I see. Well, if you change your mind when you come back, I'm sure we'll still be in need of the help."
I tried to keep my face straight. "I'm sure of that too." The councilman, though scattered, glanced between Jago and me and noted the familiar way we stood near each other.
"Are you leaving to get married? You know Esau Rivers on the east side of town used to be a judge. No need to go far if that's what you're after."
No, I stammered. I could feel my cheeks heating. "That's not what our trip is for. We don't have any plans to get married."
"Oh, well, I'm sure... well... yes."
Mr. Myers looked equally embarrassed and hooked his thumbs through his belt loops as he turned away.
"Nice piece of land you have here, Mr. Robinson."
His eyes widened.
"Those are some horses."
"Would you like a better look?"
Jago waved him forward.
"Come this way. And while you're here, Tamsin had mentioned that some of the new town buildings don't have proper window coverings. Now, I don't have any glass on me, but I know a guy, and I bet we could work out a fair price."
I watched with a smile as Jago led the councilman away, sucking him into a web of amazing deals. Forgotten, I returned to the house and my work. I still wasn't sure what to do with the newspapers, though they barely earned the name. They were nearly 30 years old, one page each, printed with very simple presses. Most of the articles were just a few lines of news from Cape Triumph and Bakerston, followed by a handful of classified advertisements. Considering how undeveloped things had been in Denham back then, these had probably been long out of date before reaching Grassy Hill. The front door opened, followed by creaking footsteps. Jago soon entered the parlour, his mood high.
"Did you fleece Mr. Myers of everything he owned?" I asked.
"Since when have I fleeced anyone?"
Jago knelt beside me.
"I made him some incredible deals, and now I don't have to haul all that wax and dried beans to Cape Triumph.
Did you see his face when I said we didn't have plans to get married? He thinks I'm some sort of wicked seductress."
"Oh, Tamsin, you aren't wicked."
I jabbed him with my elbow. "I thought I'd be getting away from gossip when I came to Adoria, and now I'm openly walking right back into it. I mean, what must Alexei think?"
"He thinks you're too good for me, and he's probably right.
He knows we're sleeping together."
"Well, unless someone in Rushwick knows Belgian, you don't have to worry about him gossiping."
"Jago," I leaned against him, "you know what I'm referring to."
"I do, and it's the least of our problems. I mean, I'd go find that judge right now, if you wanted. But I know you won't until things are settled in Cape Triumph. So, we'll go settle them, and that'll be that."
I shook my head. "You make it sound so easy."
"Well, being on the road again won't be easy. We'll have to sleep in a wagon. It's not nearly as comfortable as that luxurious straw-filled mat we're using right now. But exposing Warren's crimes, freeing you from the glittering court, I'm sure that'll be no problem. In the meantime, don't let Myers make you feel bad. If anything, he should be ashamed of that offer. One silver? I'm sure that's not what they're offering the regular clerk."
I couldn't help but laugh at Jago's indignation on my behalf. "The irony is, I don't think they'll ever get around to hiring one. They don't have the time or organisation for it. That's what a town manager's for. But that job advertisement's sitting in a stack with the clerks." I pointed at the newspapers. "Of course, a silver a week's a fortune compared to what things used to pay years ago. You should read some of these. They're fascinating. I just wish I knew how to transport them safely. Half of them fall apart when you touch them."
"There's probably someone in Cape Triumph who knows about preserving this stuff," he said, leaning in. "We can ask. Are they worth saving?"
"A historian would think so. Back in Astro, one of our clients was a professor who'd travel all over, bidding on things like this." I pointed to a few of my favourite headlines. "There are all sorts of fascinating stories about Adoria's early settlement. It was a lot more disorganised than my textbooks taught. There was one." A strange, improbable thought occurred to me. I rose on my knees, looking around the various sheets I'd laid out. When I spied the one I wanted, I gestured for Jago to join me. "Look there, at this one from Bakerston. His Majesty's Loyal Army squashes rebellious troublemakers." I pointed at the words as I read them, carefully avoiding contact with the paper. "Soldiers from Fort Shawbank were called in on Vales Day to address rumours of insurrection in Bakerston. Treasonous ruffians, led by a Mr. Harold Vance, were advocating the rebellion of Archerwood Colony from the Crown due to recent tax changes imposed upon the Charter. The rebels were quickly rounded up and imprisoned, with Mr. Vance scheduled for death by hanging next week." Jago grimaced.
"Bad day, huh? Let that be a lesson to people who complain about taxes."
"That's just it. Warren was complaining about taxes. He was really upset about the cut the king gets of Haddison's gold, and he kept wanting to know just how upset the heirs were with Gratian's charter being questioned." Neither of us said anything for a long time. I knew Jago had grasped my conclusion immediately, but it was a hard thing to know how to process.
"I don't know Warren Doyle personally," he finally said. "Do you think he's the type who would try to get the colonies to rebel?"
"Not on his own, but I could see him being part of a larger group. He has a lot of powerful connections."
"You'd have to.
One lone colony couldn't successfully rebel. You'd end up like poor Mr. Vance there. It'd take a coalition of colonies, and even then, even with manpower and weapons, you'd be hard-pressed to take on the Royal Army. And they can move fast. One speedy rider could relay news of a rebellion in Bakersden to Cape Triumph in less than a night. Denham's army could be there in the morning. Not if they were up in the outer reaches of Grashand, or down on the far southern edge, I said grimly. Not if they'd been summoned out there to handle trouble with the Ikori. Yeah, and you and I both know how long it takes messages to get here from those distant borders. Jago groaned and rubbed his eyes. Well then, I guess that settles it. How attached are you to that luxurious straw-filled mat? I raised an eyebrow. Not very. Good. Because we're going to have to get on the road earlier than planned. It was hard to sleep that night. I tossed and turned, consumed with the revelation that Warren was orchestrating conflict with the Ikori in order to clear the way for his own rebellion in the central colonies. I'd actually been sympathetic to him when he'd explained how Osfrid's steep taxes were hurting Haddison, but using that tax frustration as a way to justify the slaughter of innocent Ikori and border settlers was unforgivable. And if he was helping acquire weapons and had enough support to make him and his co-conspirators believe rebellion was possible, well, the outer colonies weren't the only places innocent people would die. Would it help if I told you a story? Jago's sleepy voice murmured beside me. I could explain the mechanics of racing bridles. That'd put you to sleep pretty fast. I rolled toward him, propping myself up on my side. The shanty had one small window, its moonlight faintly illuminating the gold of his hair. I'm sorry, I said, touching his face. I don't mean to keep you up. There's just a lot on my mind about tomorrow. He kissed my bare shoulder and brushed my hair back. It's okay. It'd be weird if you didn't have a lot on your mind. With a sigh, I sat up and drew my knees to me. I had no clothes on, and even in the middle of the night, it was still hot and muggy. I just hope we can pull this off. Even knowing what we know, will anyone believe us? We've got enough scraps to get people's attention, especially if Harper hasn't gotten too far away yet. And you know me, I can talk them into anything. Then we'll get merry, and get married, and live out the rest of our days in peace and bliss. I looked down, trying to see his face. Did you say we'll get merry or that we'll get married? I said both. He covered a yawn. Assuming you want to. And that she likes me. You know, on second thought, let's change the order. Let's get married before she gets here. A rush of pleasure went through me, despite knowing things wouldn't be quite as easy as he breezily made them out to be. Well, Mary's probably not going to be a problem so much as just... Shh! Jago sat up beside me, tilting his head. Did you hear that? A chill ran down my spine. Hear what? One of the horses. Oh, I exhaled. You scared me. He felt around for his pants on the floor and then stood up to get dressed. I've got to go check on them. They should be fast asleep. Maybe they have a lot on their minds too. He planted a kiss on the top of my head. Try to get some rest. I'll be back soon, right after I tell them a story. I lay back down after he left, draping my arms over my head. The frustration of knowing I needed to sleep was now keeping me from sleeping, and I couldn't afford to be tired when we got on the road in the morning. We needed to get to Cape Triumph fast. We'll get merry and get married. I smiled to myself as I turned his words over and over in my mind. If I was going to keep myself awake, at least it should be for something positive. But was it really? Just because we were sleeping together and uncovering treason, our logistical and financial problems weren't vanishing. We had no solution for that yet, and no matter what else happened, Mary still had to come before my own romantic longings. I sat up again, feeling glum. So much for positive thoughts. And where was Jago? A sudden fear that something had happened to one of the horses, particularly Pebble or Dove, seized me. He certainly had no shortage of horses, but they were his best driving team, and one of them getting sick would alter tomorrow's plans. Getting up, I pulled on one of Jago's work shirts and headed for the door. Then, in case I ran into Alexei, I sought the clothes I had laid out for the morning. Between Jago's motley assortment of supplies and my own sewing skills, I'd made a split riding skirt out of linen. It hung near the hearth now, and I tugged it on with the shirt. The door suddenly squeaked open, and I started to ask Jago what had happened. And then I saw the shadow that fell in the spilled moonlight on the floor. It was too big and too wide. I held my breath, shrinking back as a large man crept into the shed. I knew I had only a handful of seconds to play my advantage. There was enough lighting outside that his eyes would have to adjust in here, and even in darkness, I knew every single part of this shack. Never taking my eyes off the hulking figure as he stalked toward the window, right by the straw mat I'd just been on, I reached back toward the hearth and wrapped my hand around the iron poker. The intruder's feet bumped the pallet, and he leaned down to examine it. I advanced slowly from my hiding spot, weighing my chances of slipping past him. He'd left the door open in such a way that to get out, I'd have to pass right behind him, and he straightened up and turned around, and in that brief moment our eyes met, I recognized the dreaded, blonde-bearded face of Warren's Lorandian associate. And then I swung the poker as hard as I could. He roared in pain, and I tore out the door, not wanting to see how much damage I'd done. My heart thundered as I peered frantically around. Where to go? The barn. That's where Jago was initially headed. I ran for it, and halfway across the yard, I heard shouting in Lorandian. I rounded the barn's corner and saw the door was open. Once inside, I skidded to a halt as I was plunged into blackness. Unlike Jago, I didn't know every inch of this place. I heard the whicker of a horse and moved toward it. Suddenly, a hand clamped over my mouth. Poker still in hand, I flailed against my captor and then heard Jago's quiet voice. "Easy, Tamsin. It's me." "Jago," I whispered once he released me. "What's going on?" A gunshot rang in the distance, and I heard uneasy shuffling and snorting from the stalls. "That could be Alexei," came the grim response. "I hope it's him. Come on." Taking my hand, Jago led me to one of the stalls and unlatched it. He guided one of the horses toward the exit, and as we neared the light of the doorway, I saw he had Felicia. "I hope you haven't forgotten how to ride without a saddle. I'm not sure how many of them there are out there, but last I saw, most of the men were near the house. So, take her out around the far side of the pasture, out where the good apple trees are. Ride straight between them, and you'll get to a road that branches off the main one to the east. Then you'll..."
Wait, Jago, what are you saying? Where are you going to be?"
"Dealing with whichever ones stay. They're here for you, so most are going to follow you once they notice you're leaving. They won't be able to catch you, though. Not on her." He patted Felicia's flank and began putting a bridle on her. "Especially with how light you are. The hardest part will be when you first get out of here, if you're still in shooting range. I'm hoping not. Most of them are still searching the buildings. By the time they react, you'll be out of reach." He sounded so impossibly calm, considering the hysteria bubbling up within me.
"Jago, I can't leave you. Let me fight, or come with me."
"I'd slow you down. None of the other horses can keep up with her. You'll be safe once you're out of here with that head start, and most of them will follow you. That'll make it easier for me and Alexei to handle the rest." A gun fired again, and I jumped. Jago pressed a quick kiss to my lips. "That's by the house. Now listen, I need you to get to an Ikori outpost." He rattled off directions, and I tried to absorb them, though it was difficult, given my terrified state. When he finished, he took the poker and helped me onto Felicia's back. She danced in place a bit, but otherwise remained docile. Satisfied I was steady, Jago reached up and squeezed my hand. "You can do this," he said. "This is easy for someone like you. Just ride, and she'll get you away." He released my hand and then ran his hands over Felicia's luxurious mane. Letting out a small, wistful sigh, he reached for his belt and unsheathed a long knife. Its blade flashed in the light, and then, disbelieving, I watched as he hacked away at her long hair, cutting about 6 inches off it. "You don't want that blowing in your face," he explained. Moving in front of Felicia, he peered out the barn door. Satisfied, he looked back up at me, tension and concern taking the place of his usual merriment. "Okay, time to go." Swallowing back my fear, I gave him a jerky nod. "You'll come to me?" "Always." At Jago's command, Felicia shot out the door and ran. No, more than that. When I'd let Dove run free outside Kerneil, I'd likened it to flying. But now, racing by the pasture, I expected to look down and see wings on Felicia, launching us through the air. The silence that had preceded our exit vanished, and a flurry of noise and movement took place. I saw little of it, not with my speed and sights fixed ahead, but things unfolded much as Jago had said. Men, I got the sense there might be half a dozen, shouted and scrambled for horses. Shots were fired, one bullet striking part of the fence right as we passed it. Felicia didn't waver, though. She stretched her neck out, her long legs tearing over the ground at an incredible rate. Soon, I heard hooves behind me, but I didn't look back. I kept faith in Felicia, believing that she would stay ahead of them all. And as we continued on, following the maze of small roads Jago had described, the sounds of pursuit grew fainter. Eventually, they faded entirely. I didn't think I'd lost the Lorandians for good, but I was sure they weren't a threat for the time being. But what about Jago and Alexei? Fear for them gnawed at me as we thundered down the roads. I felt sick, thinking I'd abandoned them. Maybe most of the intruders had followed me, but what would they do when they accepted I was out of reach? If someone had been afraid enough to send this group after me, even though it seemed more likely I'd drowned, then they were probably paranoid enough to go back and deal with loose ends. They'd have to know that I would have told others what had happened, sharing more secrets Warren couldn't let go. When Jago had first gone outside to investigate the horses, he hadn't taken a gun with him, which was why he'd been forced to rely on the knife and then the poker when he discovered the attack. If most of the assailants cleared out after me, he'd have a chance to better arm himself and regroup with Alexei. The advantage would shift to them. The Lorandians wouldn't stand a chance if they came back and found their roles reversed, with them being the ones hunted in the dark. That thought eventually settled me a little, though the calm was short-lived when Felicia's hooves thumped across the wooden planks of a bridge. I drew up the reins and brought us to a stop. She hadn't shown signs of tiring in our run, though she was breathing heavily. I patted her neck and contemplated my location. In his directions, Jago had specifically called out this bridge, saying if I reached it, I'd missed a turn. Steering her back in the direction we'd come from, I squinted at the edges of the road as we moved at a much slower pace. We'd left the grasslands of Rushwick for more forested land. This was not a well-travelled road, barely big enough for two riders travelling abreast. Around it, the brush and trees were overgrown, some spreading on the road. When I reached an earlier intersection, I knew I'd missed it again. On my next pass, I finally spied the break in the vegetation that indicated our next course. It was about the same size as the previous road, but as it curved through the woods, our way grew narrower and bumpier, forcing us to a less aggressive speed. This was expected, though. The Ikori weren't supposed to have any sort of permanent presence in the colonies, but they still maintained eyes and ears. My destination, according to Jago, was an extremely out-of-the-way camp the Ikori manned to watch Denim and serve as a waypoint for messages going to various clans on the other side of the borders. It's hard to find, but if it is discovered, the Ikori will help you, Jago had told me in the barn. Someone there might recognize